Matthew 24:42. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Who then is the faithful and wise servant, whom his master has set over his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is the servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly, I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and begins to beat his fellow servants and eats and drinks with drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and put him with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, and 5 were wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. But at midnight, there was a cry, here is the bridegroom. Come out to meet him. Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves. And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered, truly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But the one who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here, I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also who had the 2 talents came forward, saying, Master, you have delivered me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also who had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, have what is yours. But his master answered him, you wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I do not sow and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right, but the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, and thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they also will answer, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry, or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister to you? And he will answer them, saying, truly I say to you, as you did not do it to the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life.
Well, thanks, Eric, for reading that for us. Really do appreciate it. If you've ever read any one of Stephen Covey's books, then you probably know this phrase, begin with the end in mind. It's from his book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It's actually one of his seven habits, begin with the end of mind. And it's a habit that is an important, or at least there's an important concept behind it. The concept behind this phrase, it begins with, I guess, the knowledge that we all have goals. We all have a destination where we want to end up. We all have a future envisioned for ourselves. So begin with the end in mind means we should be walking along the road that leads to our destination. Now, if I want to go to California, then I need to get on I-10 and go westbound. Don't need to get on I-10 and go eastbound. As a matter of fact, the person who wants to go to California gets on I-10 and goes eastbound. Well, they're not thinking, or they're not driving with the end in mind. Now, this phrase means our actions need to be oriented towards our goal. You know, if I want to be a medical doctor, that's what I'm going to go to school for. You know, I'm not going to go to school for criminal justice. If I want to have a certain amount of money saved up by the time I retire, then I'm going to work on that throughout my life. You know, that sort of thing is not just going to happen. Whenever I turn 65, there's not going to be some random person who comes up to me and says, here, Reuben, here's all of this money. That's not how it works. See, we need to live with the end in mind. And our society understands this concept. That's why so many people do save for retirement. That's why people do go to school so that they can become whatever they want to become. This concept, it's even understood in the religious realm, right? Because we as Christians, we also have goals. We have at least a goal. You know, we live with the end in mind, that is, living in eternity with our Father. We have that goal, and so we orient our actions so that we could reach that goal. So this is evident in the Christian community. As a matter of fact, sometimes it could be a little too evident in the Christian community. Sometimes I want to say that there's not a decade that goes by where someone predicts when the end of the world is going to happen. And sometimes it could be a very big thing. But the fact of the matter is, we don't know when the Lord is going to come back. That's what Eric read for us in Matthew chapter 24. Therefore, be on alert, for you do not know which day your Lord is coming. We don't know when the Lord is going to come back, but he is going to come back. So we need to be looking forward. We need to have that end in mind. This is something that's very important. If you're in Jeff's Lamentations class, there was a verse that we read that stuck with me. Lamentations chapter 1, I'm going to start reading from verse 8. Lamentations chapter 1, verse 8, it says, Jerusalem sinned greatly, therefore she has become an unclean thing. All who honored her despise her because they have seen her nakedness. Even she herself groans and turns away. Her uncleanness was in her skirts. She did not consider her future. Therefore, she has fallen astonishingly. She has no comforter. See, O Lord, my affliction, for the enemy has magnified himself. There's an interesting phrase in these two verses, and that is that she, or Israel, did not consider her future. See, that phrase really is the why. Verse 8, it says, Jerusalem sinned greatly. It says that she became an unclean thing. In verse 9, her uncleanness was in her skirts. Why? She did not consider her future. They didn't think about the promise that the Lord had made, about the punishment of the Lord if they were to live unrighteously. See, it's important to live with the end in mind. So in the lesson tonight, we're going to look into those parables that Eric read for us a little bit earlier. And we're going to talk about some things that we need to understand if we're going to live with the end in mind. So, if we're going to live with the end in mind, we need to understand that we have a master. This is something that's evident in all three of the parables. In all three of the parables that Eric read for us, there is someone who holds the power, there is someone who holds all of the authority, and there are servants. In the parable of the wise and foolish servants, at the end of chapter 24, the master is gone, and he's given these servants a temporary authority. But their authority is only temporary. The master, who has the true authority, he will come back, and he will judge them based on whether or not they've lived up to his expectations. So in that parable, we see that there is a master who holds the power and authority. In the parable of the 10 virgins, there is also a master in this story who holds the power and authority. This is why the five foolish virgins, whenever they go out, because you know the story, they don't have enough oil, and the bridegroom is coming. So they go out to find the oil, and by the time they get back, they say, Lord, Lord, let us in. And he says, I do not know you. Why can he say that? Because he's the master. He has the authority. In the parable of the talents, there's a master, and there are servants. The master, he goes away, but before he does, he gives them a temporary authority, but ultimately, he is going to come back. The one with true authority is going to come back and judge them on how they live. See, in each of these parables that we saw whenever we read together, there is a master who had expectations for his servants. And since he's the master, what do they need to do? They need to live according to the master's will. Well, if we are going to live with the end in mind, you know, we also need to understand that we have a master. And this means that life isn't about us. So we're in Matthew chapter 24. Let's read a little bit from the parable of the wise and the foolish servant. Starting in verse 45, who then is the faithful and sensible slave whom his master put in charge of his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is that slave whom the master finds so doing when he comes. Truly, I say to you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But if that evil slave says in his heart, my master is not coming for a long time, and begins to beat his fellow slaves and to eat and drink with drunkards, the master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour which he does not know, and will cut him into pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. In this parable, this foolish, this wicked servant, he had temporary authority. He had this temporary power, and he sort of let that go to his head. And he made it all about him. You know, my master's gone. He's going to be gone for a little while. So I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to beat the other slaves. I'm going to go out drinking, and I won't get caught. Because he's going to be gone. See, it wasn't about the master any longer for this slave. It was about himself. Well, similarly, God has given us a temporary authority. He has given us things to guard and keep over, kind of like Adam. The Lord put Adam into the garden. He put him in there to keep it, to guard over it. Similarly, we have a temporary authority, and for some, they allowed it to go to their heads. They make it all about them. You know, you'll hear something like, you know, I don't really like that church. It doesn't really suit me. What is that? What are they saying whenever they say something like that? Well, they're saying it's all about me. You know, I don't really care what God wants because it's all about what I want. But the fact of the matter is our life isn't about us. We are servants, and our aim is to please the master. So if we're going to live with the end in mind, then we've got to understand that we have a master. We also need to understand, if we're going to live with the end in mind, that we must be all in. Now, I choose this phrase, this idea of all in, for a specific reason. Whenever we think of the idea of being all in, that means willing to give up everything to reach your goal, right? You're putting everything on the table. You're willing to lose it all for your goal. In the parable of the talents, the foolish man who received the one talent, that sum of money, well, he was not all in. The master had blessed him with the one talent, given him the authority over the one talent, and he, the master, had expectations for the servant. This is evident at the end of the parable, because the five servant man, he went and did business with the talent. The two talent man also did the same, went and did business, and the master, he was pleased with both of those servants. But the one talent servant, he was not pleased, because the one talent servant didn't live up to his expectations. The Lord had blessed him with his talents, and what did he do with it? Nothing. He didn't do anything. He buried it in the ground. Now, I don't know exactly the motive behind that. He says that he was afraid. The master says that he was a wicked and lazy or slothful servant. Maybe he was greedy. The Lord had given him this sum of money. You know what? He didn't want to lose it doing the Lord's will. Maybe that was it. I don't know for sure his motives, but here's what I do know. He didn't care about doing the master's . He was more concerned with losing what the master had given him. Well, if we're going to be ready for the end, if we're going to live with the end in mind, then we must be all in. We must be dedicated to pleasing the Lord, even if we lose everything. Like the parable of the talents, the master has blessed us with things. He's blessed us with life. He's blessed us with different possessions. Maybe he's blessed us with family. He's blessed us with friends. The Lord has blessed us with a lot of things. Or are we lazy? Are we afraid? Or are we greedy or too afraid to lose those things that God has given us? And maybe someone says, you know, I would bring my children up right. I would teach my children the way that they should live. But I'm too afraid that they won't like me. I'm afraid that I'll lose my kids if I teach them the right way to live. Luckily, my parents were not this way. But I've seen that happen. Parents that are too focused on being the parents that are liked, but they're not parents at all. Too afraid to lose the blessing that God has given them. Or maybe it's money. Or maybe someone says, I would help this person, or I would help this person who's in need, but I've got bills too. I don't want to lose what I have in the furtherance of the kingdom. And they don't realize that all of that's from God anyway. Or maybe it's time. Maybe it's not money. Maybe someone just really needs us to spend time with them and listen to them. Because that's important also. But we value our time so much. You know, we fill our days with busy things. I've got Taekwondo on this day. I've got ballet on this day. My favorite shows come on at this time on Thursday, whatever it is. We fill our lives with so much things, and our schedules are so packed, sometimes we don't have time for one another. We've got to be willing to give up all of these things that God has blessed us with to do his will. You know, the idea in this parable really becomes reality at the end of Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25, start in verse 31, and you see these two groups of people. And the people on the right, the Lord says, "You fed me when I was hungry. You gave me something to drink when I was thirsty. You clothed me when I was naked," and so on and so forth. And they say, "Lord, when did we do all of those things?" "Well, as much as you did it to the least of these brothers of mine, you did it to me." And to those on the left, he said, well, "You guys depart from me because you did not feed me when I was hungry. When I was thirsty, you did not give me something to drink. When I was sick and tired, you did not visit me. When I was naked, you did not clothe me," and so on. And they say that they ask the same question. "When did we see you and not feed you, not give you something to drink?" And he says, "As much as you did it to the least of these." You see, that context really puts those parables, or brings those parables, into reality. Because who's the one who gave them the food and the drink and the clothing and the shelter and freedom and health? Who's the one who gave them all of those things? Well, God did. But they were refusing to share it with anyone else. Well, we've got to be different. If we're going to live with the end in mind, with our goal in mind, it means we need to be all in. We must be willing to do the Lord's will, even if it means losing what he has given us in the first place. Well, that's not all. What else do I need to understand if I'm going to live with the end in mind? Well, if I'm going to live with the end in mind, then we cannot rely on time. This is something that's evident in every single one of the parables. In the first parable that we read, the parable of the wise and the foolish servant, he thinks that he's going to have enough time. Surely my master will be a long time so I can live how I want. And you know what? Maybe I can fix it later. But the master comes back. And the master comes back, it seems like from the text, the master comes back quicker than he thinks. See, time was not on his side. He shouldn't have relied on time. In the parable of the bridesmaids, we see that the groom is delayed, and when the groom comes, the foolish servant, the foolish bridesmaids, they go out and they try and find oil for their lamps. But when they come back, the door has already been closed. Time was not on their side. In the parable of the talents, the master was gone for a long time. That's what it says. Kind of in contrast with the first parable, with the servant who says, well, surely my master will be a long time. In this parable, the master was gone for a long time, but the third servant, he didn't use that time to fix anything. He didn't use that time to make a good use of that money. The long time didn't help him at all. See, time was not on his side. And like the servants in these three parables, time's not on our side. We can't rely on time to help us to prepare for the end. Because the fact of the matter is, we may not have a long time. You know, sometimes we live life with sort of a put-it-off attitude. You know, I know I need to mow the lawn, but I'll do that later. I know I need to write this English paper for this exam or for my English class, but I'll do that later. I know I need to finish up that project for work, but it can wait. So sometimes we live with this put it off attitude, and we at times bring that into the spiritual realm. We bring that with us with regards to our faith. You know, I know I need to get right with the Lord, but I'll do that later. I have time. There's a problem with this way of thinking. This put-it-off mindset relies on time that we just might not have. The Lord can come back in the next 10 years. He can come back in the next 10 months, next 10 weeks, next 10 days, or in the next 10 minutes. You guys know where I'm going. We don't know when the Lord is going to come back. But let me just say, sort of wrapping things up here, even if we do have a long time, even if the Lord gives you all the time that you want, that we want, is that going to help anything? In the last two parables, we see that with the groom, the groom delayed. The parable of the talents, the master was gone for a long time. And did that help? Did that help them? It didn't help the man with the talents. It didn't help the foolish bridesmaid. There are people who say, I'm just going to have fun now. I'm going to live worldly today. And I'm going to fix all of that later. Because the Lord's not going to come back in such a long time. Well, even if the Lord does come back in a long time, if you have that attitude, that time is not going to help. Let's go over to Romans. Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, we're going to start reading from verse 21, and I want you to take notice, or think to yourself, take notice if you see any repeating phrases. Romans chapter 1, starting at verse 21. It says, "For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and of four-footed animals and crawling creatures. Therefore, God gave them over in the lust of their heart to impurity so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. For they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than creator, who is blessed forever. For this reason, God gave them over to degrading passions, for their women exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural. And in the same way, the men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire towards one another, men with men committing indecent acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to those things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed," and it goes on. And down in verse 32, it says, "And although they know the ordinance of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice death." There's a phrase that keeps repeating in this short section of verses that we just read. And the idea is that God gave them over. God gave them over to their passions, or God gave them over to a depraved mind. I think the idea behind that is we can walk so long down a certain road, down the road of worldliness, let's call it that. We can walk so long down that road that we don't come back. Similar to Psalm 115, where it talks about the idols. It talks about how the idols are blind, how they're deaf, how they cannot speak. It says, and those who create them become like them. We can go so far down the road that leads to worldliness. We can walk down that road for so long that we just can't see the way back. We become blind. This is sort of evident in verse 32 of that passage in Romans. It says, and although they know the ordinance of God, that those who practice things are worthy of death, they not only do the same thing, but give hearty approval to those who practice them. See, they know the right thing to do, but they don't truly understand why they should do the right thing. They know the right thing, but they don't do it anyway. Why? Because they can't see. Because God gave them over to a depraved mind. Maybe God grants us the long time that we want to fix things. But will it help? If we live with the end in mind, then we need to understand that we cannot rely on time. You know, people can speculate all they want. They can say the Lord's going to come back at this time or whatever, but ultimately, we don't know when God's going to come back. So we need to make sure that we live with the end in mind. So closing up, let me just ask a question. Are you ready for that day? Are you ready for the end? Are you living with the end in mind? Well, if not,